Welcome to this Budget and Tax News podcast. I'm Steve Stanek, Managing Editor of Budget and Tax News. With us today is William Shugart, the F.A.P. Barnard Distinguished Professor of Economics at University of Mississippi, the immediate past president of the Southern Economic Association, a senior fellow at the Independent Institute, and I think especially appropriate for our discussion today, he is also editor-in-chief of Public Choice. Public Choice is a journal that studies the intersection between economics and political science. Professor Shugart, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here, too. Now, you're editor-in-chief of a journal that studies the intersection between economics and political science, and that's a busy, busy intersection these days, isn't it? What with the Federal Reserve printing money like there's no tomorrow, bailouts of too-big-to-fail financial firms, and the federal government becoming a major player in the nation's auto industry. And that brings us to the first topic I'm hoping you can discuss with us, and that is the recent news regarding General Motors and its stock sale. Government officials sounded quite pleased with themselves over how the stock sale went, and I'm wondering, do you think they should be pleased, and should taxpayers be pleased?
Well, it's certainly true that this initial public offering of new GM stock is the largest in U.S. history. It seems to have raised something like $23 billion for GM, which still, however, is, we should refer to it as Government Motors, not General Motors, because even after this IPO, the federal government, the taxpayers of this nation still own about a third of that company. And certainly there's been lots of praise in the financial press and out of Washington characterizing this as a success, but I'm more skeptical about that for a number of reasons. Nobody has made the point yet that one reason that the IPO was so successful was that We've now learned that General Motors, Government Motors, is too big to fail, and that anybody who buys stock in GM recognizes that if the company gets in trouble again in the future, which I expect it will do, that there's another bailout looming, and so there's little risk in buying the stock for those who have bought it, but there's still a huge risk for the taxpayers of the United States.
And we've actually seen two bailouts for Chrysler, haven't we? I'm old enough to remember in the 1980s when Chrysler was handed several billion dollars to stay in business. And now here we are 20-some years later after Chrysler made a lot of noise about paying off that bailout. They've been bailed out again with General Motors, haven't they?
Yeah, as FDR once said, history does, in fact, repeat. And you're right. The Ford Motor Company is the only American automaker that hasn't benefited from largesse here. Chrysler has benefited twice. GM is now a major beneficiary of the taxpayers' money. And what's risky about that is that even though the IPO reduced the government share, ownership share, from about two-thirds to one-third, it's still the case that the U.S. government is the largest shareholder of General Motors, and who knows what that will result in terms of replacing management, causing loss of nameplates. GM is no longer producing Pontiac and so forth, or the Hummer, and it's betting the farm on the Chevy Volt. And you know, I'm very nervous about that in terms of the success of future success of GM. I mean, here we have a untested hybrid vehicle that is, even though it's the green car of the year, according to some people, remains to be seen whether the hassle of and the cost of recharging the batteries in that, that car will turn people off. So, you know, I'm not very optimistic about that. You know, the Volt is going to lead GM into a bright future because it did not have to go through ordinary bankruptcy proceedings. It's still saddled with UAW contracts. And the union has been recently very definite in saying that, you know, they want a share of that extra value that the IPO has created. And it may well be that when new contracts are negotiated, that a lot of the cash benefits to GM of the IPO are going to be soaked up by higher wages, better benefits, even more restrictive work rules that will continue to be make GM uncompetitive in the global economy.
I live in far northeast Illinois, and so I'm an easy drive to Kenosha, Wisconsin, and I was there just recently, and it reminded me that back in the day, Kenosha was home to one of the big four automakers. I think a lot of people forget there used to be a big four. The fourth was American Motors. They had the Gremlin and Rambler. I had some high school friends of mine who had some AMC cars. And I think a lot of people also forget that one of the major brands that AMC had was Jeep. Yet the government let American Motors Corporation fail. Chrysler took over Jeep, and I'm wondering, what do you think would have happened if, instead of bailing out General Motors or Chrysler, the federal government had let one or both of them go down? Would do you think we would have seen some of the good assets of those companies put to use by other auto companies the way we saw Jeep go to Chrysler after AMC went under?
Certainly, I think that's true. Of course, we'll never know what would have happened, but you know, the proper course of action here for the federal government should have been just apply the normal proceedings of bankruptcy. Let the asset market value the assets of all the nameplates, and some of them would have survived, but others may have gone away as they have nowadays. You know, bankruptcy would have been painful for GM, for its employees, for its suppliers, and the you know, the pain of that may have been sharper than what we've witnessed over the last couple of years, but it would have lasted much less long than having the government take over GM. Impose whatever regulations it wanted to on terms of replacing management and getting rid of dealers and so forth. I mean, the market would have sorted things out relatively quickly, and you know, GM may not have survived as a standalone company, but whatever products it had that were consumers wanted to buy would have survived, and you know, its assets in terms of manufacturing facilities and assembly facilities, some of them would have disappeared, others would have gone into the hands of other auto companies, but we would not have had, as a result, essentially a state-owned enterprise here.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what the future is of, but we've now drawn a line in the sand saying that GM's too big to fail, and that's why people flock to buy the stock. They know that if GM gets into trouble again, there's another bailout on the horizon.
And speaking of bailouts, there's another report dealing with that, recent report from the Congressional Budget Office. That report said the Troubled Asset Relief Program, known as TARP, which shoveled hundreds of billions of dollars to a host of banks and other businesses, will end up costing taxpayers about $25 billion. And again, government officials are very pleased with this news because initially they were afraid that those those hundreds of billions of dollars would be lost. I'm curious to know, what do you think about this news regarding the TARP?
Well, only $25 billion. It's amazing how nowadays we toss around numbers like that as if they were meaningless or small change, and certainly compared to the more than $1 trillion federal budget deficit, they are small change. I'm suspicious of that number because there are all kinds of accounting shenanigans going on here with all of these bailouts.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in the GM's case, and AIG and some of the other institutions that were the recipients of that money, they have been granted the right to carry forward for the next 20 years losses that they incurred because of mismanagement and fraud and other funny money accounting practices. They're get credits against their taxes in the
mm-hmm.
future for making bad business decisions, for losing money.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know what that $25 billion number means, whether it's accurate or not. And even if it is accurate, taxpayers are on the hook for $25 billion of losses mm-hmm. on that fund in the future, and they're going to be left holding the bag.
My initial reaction when I heard the news was to scoff at it because I clearly remember many of the financial firms that took TARP money did so under protest. They had the money forced on them. I remember many of these prominent executives saying, our firm does not want the money, but the government forced it on them anyway. So I'm thinking, well, is it really that big a deal that they're going to get money back from firms that said they never needed it?
Yeah, that's right. I remember vividly that when the TARP program was first initiated, that Hank Paulson, the Treasury Secretary then,
mm-hmm.
and others, called a bunch of financial institutions into a conference room in D.C. and said, you're going to take this money, whether you need it or not. And so you're right. If we would look at the losses associated only with those firms that actually were in dire financial straits and would not have survived without that money.
Like AIG?
Yeah, like AIG, that the rosy scenario that the Treasury and the other Federal Reserve and Washington are placing on this on the TARP would be less rosy.
Mm-hmm. And when we look at things like the government's involvement in General Motors and Chrysler and the TARP bailouts, is there a takeaway message that you think people should understand about it? And by that I mean all money has opportunity costs. If we spend money here, we cannot spend it there. If we spend our time doing this, we cannot spend our time doing that. Do you think that by the government pouring money into these things, it has really misallocated resources and done harm that many people really do not see because it's things that people who don't have an economic background really don't even think about?
I think that's certainly true. The current policies of the Federal Reserve, keeping interest rates low, and pouring money into private sector firms that otherwise might have gone under, shifts resources away from perhaps more highly valued uses. I mean, I can think, anybody could think of a more highly valued use of $25 billion than losing it in the TARP program.
Mm-hmm. Helping to line the pockets of business executives and their multi-million dollar bonuses.
I mean, if you wanted to try to understand what's going on here, I think that the combination of fiscal policies and Federal Reserve policies over the last 2 years have been designed to benefit, Goldman Sachs and mm-hmm. other Wall Street firms at the expense of the rest of us. And,
mm-hmm.
There's a tax overhang that's associated with that. People are not only uncertain as to the future of the economy, what's the cost of the Obamacare, what are we going to do 2 years from now when the Bush tax cuts may expire again. It's no wonder that business is not hiring or expanding,
mm-hmm.
Except those that have been on the receiving end of federal largesse. And we're in for a long haul here, unless the ordinary American realizes that government has no money of its own.
Mm-hmm.
The only way you can raise it, raise revenue, is to tax it, or to borrow it, or to print money.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something in the Austrian School of Economics called that suggests that when government keeps interest rates low to try to encourage business investment, well, it's successful. But we get too much capital and not enough consumer goods
mm-hmm.
as a result. Maladjustment in the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are right now. We're
mm-hmm.
Directing monies into so-called green initiatives, alternative fuels, windmills, solar power, geothermal power. Government's making those decisions on our behalf, but it's not clear to me, and because government doesn't really face market prices, that it's allocating those resources to their highest valued use.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one of the things that has bothered me about the interest rate policies, and we'll sign off with this, is that millions of people are hurt by it without even knowing it, without realizing it. Or if they do realize it, they feel powerless to do anything about it. Look at people who might want to just save money. If you are just disciplined and trying to put away a little money each week, you might as well be throwing it into the mattress because you can't get anything at the bank anymore. You have people on pensions who are not seeing their pension benefits increase. They're seeing their savings go nowhere. And if inflation takes off, they're going to be ruined.
That's exactly right. We're going to sit. I have a eat breakfast at a local Greasy Spoon every morning, and one of the people there actually is a retiree who is nostalgic for the days of Jimmy Carter because mm-hmm. we had interest rates of 18% or plus. But he's hit hard because all his retirement funds and investments are in accounts that pay, you know, at most 3%.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can find that, a rate that high, let me know because I get less than 0.5% of interest on my savings and most of the other investments I have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough. People on fixed incomes, especially retired people, bondholders, dire straits, I think each of them personally recognizes how hard they're hit, but there doesn't seem to be any recognition globally or nationally of how damaging current government policies are to the economy as a whole.
Thanks for joining us today, and thanks to your listeners. I hope you join us again for next week's Budget and Tax News podcast. Professor, thanks very much.